café in la careta, or something deep inside the sky. I try to understand my thoughts. There's nothing here that really matters.
Good evening and welcome back, folks. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, heard planet-wide here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and very, very excited to welcome an old friend back to the program. He hasn't been on with me yet at night, but, you know, that doesn't change anything. Actually, it probably is a little more conducive to his schedule, perhaps, than my early show. Welcome to the program, John Moore.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
Yeah, how you been?
Oh, busy. I stay busy. I'm one of them classic type A personalities, can't sit still.
Yeah, I can relate to that, actually. I've just, you know, Friday rolls around and I just have to sit down and go, gosh, when does it ever slow down? And it doesn't seem to at all these days. Folks, you can go to John's website at www.thelibertyman.com. And, of course, while you're there, I would urge you to peruse all of John's products, his videos, his books, his booklet that we've got here in my hand. It's called No Need for Panic. John, this is probably one of the finest pieces of vital information condensed into such an easy format that I've ever read in my life. I'm such a huge fan of it.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm gaining a lot of supporters for that paper, that article, all over the country, including 24 police officers in one of the major metropolitan police departments I won't mention. And hopefully it will be a book. I've got a deal with a publisher. I just have to sit down and write the book.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, the beauty, of course, of the subject matter is that in addition to preparedness, there's just a slew of information coming out almost on a daily basis that you know, enhances everything that you've been warning about for so long.
Absolutely. And like I was telling you off the air, here's a freebie for everybody. Put this in your Google search engine, DOD Climate Report. It's for Department of Defense, DOD Climate Report. And I just did this to make sure it still worked. The first thing that pops up on Google will be the complete 22-page report that was done for the Department of Defense. They paid $100,000 for this. I have to admit, I was in a hurry. I've only read up until a couple of days ago, earlier this week, the 3-page executive summary these past 3.5 years. The complete 22 pages, however, is very significant, especially in light of the fact that it's been out for 3.5 years. And the things that they were predicting 3.5 years ago, we're now watching happening on the nightly news.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, I'll just give you a quick quote here. More hurricanes, monsoons, floods, and dry spells. So, a little bit deeper into the report, they're talking about how dry it's going to be in the interior of Australia, and would cut down on the cattle production, which in fact is being reported also.
Yes.
So I think it's very important. This is all your listeners can get this at no charge. If they don't have internet access, they can go to the local library and download it and print it out. It's very significant, very important. And one of their most important points, which I make in my article also, Frank, is the extreme significance of the North Atlantic Conveyor, also known as the North Atlantic Thermohaline Conveyor, and the impact that will have, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, the impact it will have when it stops. There was a very widely publicly mentioned article in December of 2005 that had lost approximately half, 40% or so of its mass and velocity.
Wow.
There's been almost no public mention since then of what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the other thing that really stands out to me, John, that I've noticed and mentioned on the air is the Department of Defense, the climate report, is not a global warming report per se, but rather climate change in both directions. And this
Absolutely.
Is something that is obviously not being discussed, as this has become a trendy cause of celebrities. And Al Gore, of course, winning an Oscar for An Inconvenient Truth, I think, sort of launches this thing into the stratosphere. You've got, you know, the head of the United Nations, the Secretary General, you know, invoking Al Gore's documentary in the course of saying that he is going to make global warming one of his priorities.
Absolutely.
Once you start getting the politicians involved with this, it starts getting nasty.
Absolutely. I believe it was Monday, February the 12th, if I'm not mistaken, where they opened the barn doors on all this publicity on global warming and climate change. Mm-hmm. And it's been pretty much every day nonstop since then, and I believe, Frank, is going to continue nonstop for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, one of the things that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, one of the things that I foresee with this in terms of the 2008 presidential election, this is going to be a monstrous issue for a number of reasons, because, A, the cause of the environment has typically been a Democrat agenda for the most part. And they're going to, of course, blame George W. Bush and therefore the entire Republican Party for global warming in its existence and the idea of the Kyoto protocols and things like that. But the way I see this going down, John, is I see the churches being involved in this. And, of course, we mentioned this on the show earlier this week about Scripture mentions about those who would destroy the world would be destroyed by God and things like that. This is going to be an opportunity for the Democrats to tap into that voting bloc that has typically been Republican, supporting a ban on abortions, the ban on same-sex marriages and things like that. Well, they haven't really got, meaning the churchgoers, they haven't really gotten what they wanted, what they were promised from the Republican Party, and I think they're going to make the swing towards the Democrats on this issue in particular.
Well, I agree on one hand. On the other, it's much ado about nothing.
Yes. Yeah.
Whoever sits in the Oval Office or in those many seats in Congress will not change any of this. It's a major distraction is all it is.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. I want people to understand how big this is going to get as an issue.
It will be huge. And the government and the official government line is being put out front and will stay out front as the only way that you can think about this and relate to it and ponder it. There's the main points made by Gore are the government's policy, quite frankly.
Mm.
What Al Gore put through in his, and I urge everybody to watch his film, by the way, and I analyze that film in my paper. I don't know if you got the most recent version or not. They want people to believe that these CO2 greenhouse gases caused by mankind are one of the primary causes, which leads to the next major point that human activity, if it can start it, then it can slow it down or stop it, which gives people hope.
Yes.
And something to focus our energy on. And last but not least, the timeline. Gore mentions a timeline in his film. Dr. Jim Hansen with the NASA Goddard Space Institute has publicly written about the same timeline as follows. 10 years in the future, or actually nine now, in 2016, things will start to get bad, and then in 2050, they will really get bad. That is the official government timeline, which is a complete distraction, a complete fraud, as opposed to the real timeline, which I'm privileged to be aware of.
Yes, it's right at the beginning of your booklet, and it's one of the most powerful portions of it insofar as to say that it does completely fly in the face of what the politicians and the celebrities and all of the figureheads are speaking about. It also, your time frame obviously coincides with the Pentagon climate report as well.
Well, the climate report, now first of all, when you go to this Google site and download and read this thing, this is the open source or the unclassified version.
Yes.
However, there is a classified version of this. And I although I've tried, I can't get my hands on the classified version. First of all, why would they have something like that classified? As if the Russian, have we got a break coming up? No. The Russians and the Chinese don't have qualified PhD climatologists, meteorologists, oceanographers, and so forth.
Perfect.
Well, of course they do. Of course they do. So who's it classified from?
Yes.
It's classified from the citizens of this country. That's the only target audience that they would try to keep this secret from, because clearly our only enemies of any consequence, the Russians and Chinese, know this as well as we do. The classified version says what they don't want you to know about, and that would be primarily the effects of rising ocean levels, which is mentioned very briefly in the unclassified version of abrupt climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the timeline. That's the most significant thing, is the real timeline as opposed to the false timeline.
Absolutely. And the very fact that it's entitled Abrupt Climate Change should, you know, be somewhat of a heads up for people.
It should be.
Yeah.
It should be. And you know, the 2.5-page executive summary is scary enough, but the complete 22 pages is a huge wake-up call. And I urge people, it doesn't cost a penny. Well, if you're at the library, you may pay 10 cents a sheet to print it out, but insignificant cost to read this and digest it and incorporate it in everything you're doing.
Yes, without a doubt. Well, I think that, you know, considering it's 22 pages, you know, and they should absolutely read it without a doubt. But you know, hey, take that $2.20 and put it towards the $5 for your booklet. That's what I say, because they're going to get a lot more truth out of this.
My booklet, my article, which has footnotes, a bibliography, a list of websites. It's kind of funny, Frank. A college professor friend of mine, we've been friends for 35 years. He read it. He says, John, is there more than this? And I said, his name's Sandy. Sandy, you mean more than the 5,000 pages of my bibliography? You know, you know, give me a break.
Yeah.
You know, the science is there. The science is there, and you can find the science in my bibliography. Well, we got a break now.
Yes, there it is. All right, John, bear with us, folks. We're going to take a short break here of only 3 minutes. We'll try to iron out some technical difficulties, and we'll be back with a great mind who's joining us here this evening, John Moore. The website, www.thelibertyman.com. Stay with us. We're back in three.
Glad you're here. You're listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Our phone number this evening and always, 800-313-9443. Toll free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Our good friend John Moore is joining us this evening. His website, thelibertyman.com. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Frank. Where do you want to go from here?
John?
Hello? I'm here.
All right.
Hello, hello.
Okay, John, I can hear you on the feed, but Thomas, you're going to have to go ahead and put him through to me because I'm not hearing him.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah,
hello?
Still not hearing you.
Okay.
Thomas.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I know we're both on the air, but I need to be able to hear him. So.
Yeah, this will not work if one
John.
Can't hear the other. I hear you, Frank.
All right. There you are, buddy. How you doing?
Okay. I am wonderful. Okay. Now we've got the technical stuff behind us. Where do we go from here, Frank?
Well, from here, my friend, we talk about this time frame. The Pentagon climate report, and people can, of course, read the foreign press, their interpretation of it with actual quotes and whatnot, which is you know, frightening enough. Reading the whole thing, which I did, was able to find it today thanks to you and your guidance on that. It's pretty stunning, and it does not talk about the things that you might hear from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change from the United Nations, for example, which would say something like, we're going to go up a degree in the next 100 years. By 2100, it's going to be 1 degree hotter. I mean, that's not scary, really.
Right. No, so not at all.
There's a discrepancy in the official version that they're trying to portray to people, John, that it's a huge issue, yet with a small incremental change.
Well, I agree. Now, in the abrupt climate change, the Department of Defense report, they mentioned the year 2010 several times throughout this paper. They only mentioned, and I find that kind of ironic, they only mentioned rising ocean levels once and affecting only a small part of the country, as if the ocean only goes up in one part of the ocean at a time, which was kind of bizarre. This is significant. I'm glad I finally took a moment, and I just happened to have some time earlier in the week to finally read this thing. It's important, and people need to read it, but I think it might be helpful for people to understand, let's do the timeline, the real timeline. Let's go ahead and do that.
In the Pentagon climate report, it mentions that people will start to see things. They said, actually, a couple times in there, that we don't really know exactly where we are on the timeline, which I think is interesting as well with some of the predictions. But, you know, they mentioned 2005 we'll have a lot of flooding, and we did during the hurricane season. 2004 was a really bad hurricane season. Obviously, this year has been extraordinarily traumatic with, you know, up to 10 to 12 feet of snow in parts of New York, lots of tornadoes, lots of lightning storms, things like that, huge amounts of hail. The word rarity and unusual and things like that keep popping up in regards to weather. And then, of course, watching this thing and looking at it, it's always been a concern to me, the weather and whatnot, because I've been caught in some bad weather many times and barely escaped. But, you know, here in your booklet, when I came across this, when you sent this to me, oh, gosh, about a year ago, my mind was blown, John, because the time frame here is quite a bit different.
Okay. Well, here's a time frame. And in January 2009, which is in 21 months, the U.S. government begins evacuating their own people, government employees and their families, from the East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast, and Great Lakes areas, completing their evacuations in 33 months, which is in December of 2009. Which I think is significant in light of this DOD report, because they talk about 2010, which just happens to be the month following January 2010, the completion of their evacuations.
That's right.
21 months is not much time.
No.
It's you know, it'll be here before we know it. It will just fly by. Mm-hmm. And because of the disruption and the expense, they would not do this evacuation until the last moment. It's an absolute logistical nightmare, mm-hmm. to move tens of thousands of men and women, their children, their adult children, their household possessions, their pets. It's just an absolute logistical nightmare, and that's what they're in the process of undertaking and putting into place, is that huge logistical challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's pretty mind-boggling. And obviously, you're a military man. I come from a military family, and you know this, that typically the average military family would get, 30 days notice to pack everything up and get out? Yeah, hopefully. Scenario, obviously, you know, the things that they can do to move this whole process forward, excuse me, the personnel involved will be the last ones to know.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Although what I'm also seeing, Frank, is offices of 4,000 and 5,000 people already being moved out of Washington, D.C., for example.
Wow.
It's already happening. And you don't have to dig too deep to find it in open sources.
Wow.
As if you could hide moving an off, a 5,000 yeah. people anyway.
But you got to know where to look as well. And obviously, we're fortunate to have your insight here on this.
Well, this particular office, there's another break.
Okay, well, the technical difficulties are ironed out, so this one will go a lot smoother, I think. Stay with us, my friends. In 3 minutes, we shall return with more Frankly Speaking Radio with our special guest this evening, John Moore. Don't waste any time, my friends. Obviously, our time is limited, as you should already know. TheLibertyMan.com. Pick up this booklet, No Need for Panic. It's only $5. Can't beat that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. You're listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. All right. Let's get back to our guest, John Moore. John, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it. You know, when we left off, we were talking about these time frames and things like that. One of the other things that really jumped out at me about the Pentagon Climate Report, which I think also gels with the information that you have, and I'm sure you've expanded upon, which is, of course, this the war on terror. The war on terror has been the excuse for the clampdown on civil liberties, the excuse for the push into various nations, which, strangely enough, happen to be pretty fat with natural resources, which is also mentioned in there, that wars would be fought for this, that nuclear weapons would be developed and used and threatened to be used in the course of acquiring or defending natural resources.
Right. Okay.
The war on terror?
I'm considering writing a short article, one or two or three pages at the most, about how do you know when you've won the war on terrorism?
Mm-hmm.
Is there going to be a signing ceremony with the representatives of the 200 to 300 Islamic terrorist groups on the deck of the nuclear aircraft carrier?
Doubtful.
Where they sign the peace treaty?
Mm.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
How do you know when you've won?
Mm-hmm.
There's a billion Islamic people on this planet, and probably several million healthy young Islamic males who would love to be martyrs for their cause.
Mm-hmm.
At least 200 to 300 that we know of, Islamic terrorist groups. The question is, how do you know when you've won? We have a war against an enemy that we would never know if we've won.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know? How do you know?
Right.
Nobody's asking that question publicly that I'm aware of.
Well, except for us, I'm sure. But, yeah, my contention here is, quite simply, in this push for natural resources, is the war on terror completely made up in order to give us the excuse?
Well, it is, clearly the war in Iraq was done under false pretenses.
Yes.
And there's been some public mention of that, and nobody in Congress, the Congress critters, as I sometimes hear referred to, none of them are willing to go to the wall and say what needs to be said.
Yeah.
Congress was lied to get them to sign off on this war. That's not being said. It needs to be said. In fact, there's probably sufficient evidence for indictments to be put out for the men and women who did the lying to Congress.
Yes.
I would not hold my breath for that, however. I don't believe we're going to see that happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm just making connections here with various things going on in the news and about how this could tie in to the whole agenda of the whole the climate report and sort of what goes on with that.
One must keep in mind, Frank, that multiple agendas can proceed forward
absolutely.
With or without them complementing each other. In fact, they could be at odds with each other, mm-hmm. and these agendas will continue to move forward.
Yes.
You've mentioned on the air the plain brown envelopes you get from people inside Walmart giving details of the blueprints of Walmart's shelters for their people.
Yep.
Well, clearly, the business model of Walmart is not going to change, and I'm aware of. They're going to keep marketing their stuff to the people all over the world that want to buy it.
Sure.
At the same time, they have a hidden agenda of preparing very nice, very extensive and expensive shelters to take care of their own people. So the business model doesn't change for Walmart. Now, the business model for Warren Buffett's insurance companies has changed considerably.
That's true.
To take into account the threat posed by climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And other insurance companies, you see their insurance carriers are dropping coverage in these coastal areas, are dramatically increasing the premiums, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Their business models have changed dramatically due to climate change.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing many, many other things as well. Another thing that you and I discussed, and certainly I don't know of anybody else who's making this connection. A lot of people were suspicious with George W. Bush's purchase of land, down south. It was a lot of people thought, well, you know, he's doing it to escape war crimes charges. Well, you know, the powers that be are not going to attack any of their own. They might, go ahead and assassinate them if it serves their purpose. But I think George Bush is going to get a pat on the back. But he's got this territory now that has the largest source of fresh water available. It's got certainly a lot of mountainous terrain and a lot of protection from winds and things like that. It's very high above sea level and relatively close to oil fields and things like that. I think that all that has to be factored into this as well. And I actually saw a story on a fairly mainstream blog, John, that sort of highlighted that same thing. Again, something we had been considering as well.
Well, everything you said is true. In addition to everything you said, if you put an X through the continent of South America, the land purchased by the Bush family is almost at that X, and it's very close to the middle of a very large continent. And if you're looking at a worst-case scenario, as outlined in Velikovsky's books, with 1,000-foot tidal waves and 200-mile-an-hour winds, you'd want to be in the middle of a really big continent to help protect yourself.
That's true. It's very true. Well, you know, one of the things that a lot of people have factored a lot of this into is do they know something about a comet, asteroid, massive body that's going to be swinging by close? And there's certainly a lot of talk about Planet X for a while there, and then it kind of faded out because, you know, people make predictions and things like that. And I don't think you are a science guy, John. You don't play around with that stuff, and that's great. But the point here is that these things have been patterns of events throughout human history. I remember watching a program, and I couldn't tell you where I saw it. You probably have seen it as well. It was about the Sphinx, the true age of the Sphinx, and what they were saying is that there's water damage on the Sphinx, indicating it was there long before the Great Flood.
Absolutely.
So when you think about that, then it would seem that just like Halley's Comet comes by every 75 years, that if there is a Planet X or Wormwood, that it would be coming by on a regular basis, and great floods throughout history, which are mentioned in every creation story of every single community of indigenous people, folks who have never read the Bible. So obviously there is some memory of this.
Well, I agree, and there are written records in every culture that have written records, and there's verbal records in most of the others. Going back to the DOD report, they mentioned some numbers about the younger Dryas age, which began 12,700 years ago. What those of us who research the 10th planet know is that this thing swings through every 3,600 years. And this mentioning of what happened 12,700 years ago fits hand in glove with three passages ago, I should say. And that's significant, I believe.
Yeah.
In addition, I have here in my hand, many people, I should say, get a Sunday newspaper, and there's something called the Parade Magazine Sunday Supplement, which has tens of millions of readers every week. Mm-hmm. The January 15th, 2006 edition, the cover story is, quote-unquote, how many planets are there? Hint, it's not nine.
Wow.
So NASA had announced in August of 2005 the discovery of the 10th planet. Now, what they're calling the 10th planet, what those of us who research this believe to be the 10th planet, are two different things. But NASA, once again, has to be out front, has to control the high ground on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they announced they found the 10th planet about a year and a half ago, and they will continue to keep the high ground. I have no doubt whatsoever, because they've got to control the media and we don't. What do they call this thing? It's named after a Greek goddess. It's kind of funny. They don't have it in big letters what the name of the new planet is.
Oh, you're talking about this
the
planet?
The 10th planet that NASA claims to have found. Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the name of it.
That's kind of funny. Where is the name of the new planet?
Well, while you look for it, you know, mentioning about keeping the information sort of on the down low, I think it's very intriguing. I've interviewed some people, and I know you have too, who have probably mentioned the same thing to you, which is that for the most part, if you look at it, our government, meaning the United States, and people friendly to the U.S., control almost every, you know, substantial
heiress.
But yeah, our government or governments friendly to the United States control access to every observatory substantial in size and power enough to be able to see these things that might be coming from a distance, indicating, of course, the clampdown on panic. which is what your book seeks to do, is dispel the panic by giving the truth, whereas they would seek to dispel the panic by keeping us in the dark.
Absolutely. And the new telescopes are being installed either in the Antarctic or the extreme parts of South Africa and South America.
Mm-hmm. Australia as well.
Australia. They want that view south. That's where all this stuff's coming from, is from the south.
Yes.
And that's where the new ones are being built, and all the attention is being directed is towards the south.
Mm. It's a mess. Obviously a big mess. You know, when you're looking at this, obviously the idea of information being powerful and information being empowering to people that have, you know, eyes to see, ears to hear, and be able to process these truths, like in your booklet here, obviously they would want to know what to do, where to go, how to handle this. Now, as far as the government and their personnel and their assets, do you know where they're being moved to, per se?
I do. And if any of your listeners live near a Superfund cleanup site, many of them, not all of them, but many of them were little more than cover stories to build the shelters underground.
Wow.
Perfect pretense for the following reasons. Cleaning up nuclear waste is something that almost nobody understands, how much it costs, how long it takes, so it's a perfect pretense.
That's an excellent point.
Oh, yes. Black hole of unaccountable money.
Now, let me ask you this. How much sense does it make, in the event of massive global flooding, to build an underground shelter?
Well, given sufficient financial resources,
yeah.
you can anything. Of course, we're talking about engineering problems. Engineering problems have engineering solutions.
Yes.
And the engineers that they put on these projects are very well qualified commercial construction engineers to deal with seismic activity, mm-hmm. to deal with water, and so forth. Now, they may have got ahead of themselves in terms of what they think they can accomplish, and they may fail. Some of these shelters may end up being death traps, and I know people who have access to them that want nothing to do with them.
Really?
In fact, the nickname of the many government insiders is they call them hotels.
Mm.
U.S. Navy has some under the oceans, by the way. That's a whole different topic.
Oh,
wow. Yes. Well, if you have nuclear power, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what it takes to make these things work, is a source of power that's virtually without limit.
Wow.
So, yes.
That's amazing. Well, certainly, without the benefit of the best engineering minds on the planet that money can buy and keep silent, what about the average Joe? I mean, you and I are virtually in the same area of the country.
Well, we are. We're both in the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks. Mm-hmm. And I did a nationwide speaking tour on this topic, Frank, for the Prophecy Club in mm-hmm. January 06. Mm-hmm. The Detroit engagement, I was on a break. It's a three-hour presentation. I had an audience member come up and say, John, now we know. I'm in the insurance industry. Now we know. We've wondered for years, why do we have so many retired Navy people in the zip codes of the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks? The Navy people know about this.
Yes.
They've been giving classified briefings to their own people for more than 20 years. I've interviewed four of these men, and it's now up to four, who've been present at these classified briefings. All four men chose the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks for the retirement homes. This is not by chance. These men don't know each other. I interviewed them at separate times in separate places.
And they all said the same thing.
They all said the same thing. The map in my article mm-hmm. is a hand-drawn map that's been shown to all four men. All four men say, yes, John, this map is very close to the classified map we saw in our classified briefings.
Wow. That is really fascinating to me because, excuse me, when you look at this, And there's certainly a lot of information that people need to consider when they're looking at this, prayerfully consider this. You've got a pretty substantial line of water where the Mississippi River seemed to have been. obviously, with the sea level increase, you're going to have that. But you know what else is interesting is you probably have picked up on this because it is, of course, local for us. Heck of a lot of earthquake drills coming up this summer all along the New Madrid Fault, which is pretty much around where the Mississippi River is. So it makes me wonder, you know, this is going to be our new coastline, you know, to a certain extent.
Well, the Gulf Coast will be at the near the border of Missouri and Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I just gave a copy of that paper to a sheriff in a Missouri county in that area just in the last 48 hours. Mm. And I said, sir, you know, you live with earthquake threats down here. I'm going to give you something you've never had before. That's a timeline. And we talked about it for a few minutes. I gave it to him. I said, if you want to have any questions, give me a call. Mm. I've been giving this paper to various people in positions of authority, judges, prosecutors, sheriffs, police officers. And here's what I tell them, Frank. I say, I don't want you or expect you to say or do anything publicly right now. People will just think you're a nutcase.
Mm-hmm.
But when the time comes, you'll know what's going on, you know why it's going on, and then you go public with what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go public before that point in time, people will simply think you're a nutcase.
So for now, you're the nutcase, I'm the nutcase, the listeners are
absolutely
nutcases. But yeah, that's okay.
I'm out there on a limb. I'm the nutcase. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's one of those things, John, I'm sure, just like anything that we talk about here on this show, I would love to be wrong.
Well, I wrote that paper for my brother and for my brother-in-law, two men I love dearly. They have mm-hmm. beautiful families, wives, children, adult children now.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew full well, because I've known these men so long, obviously my brother my entire life and my brother-in-law 25 years, I knew in my heart they would not act on my paper, but I was compelled to write it and give it to them anyway.
That's right.
And I did the right thing, and they've got it, and God bless them. You know, it's in their lap now.
Mm-hmm. That's all we can do, my friend, especially as talk show hosts. That's the best we can do is just put it out there. And people can hear it or, you know, they can disregard it. But the point is that we have spoken and done our obligation to getting the truth out. We've done what God has compelled us to do.
We got a break. Let's talk about the I-35 corridor and how it impacts on us when we get back.
I would love that. Thank you, John. We'll be right back, folks. Please stay with us. Tail end of our first hour, my friends. I'm glad you're here with us. Of course, this hour is being brought to you by Howard Creek Resort, featuring 9 fully equipped individual housekeeping cabins and easy access to a multitude of fun things to do, as only you can find here in this Arkansas area. Howard Creek Resort, the perfect family vacation spot any time of the year. And, of course, when you're planning your future move to the Arkansas-Missouri Ozark region, as we're discussing here, this would be a great place to sort of spend some time and you know, hunt around for houses and whatnot. You can visit them on the web at www.howardcreek.com or call them toll-free at 877-253-7690. John Moore, our guest this evening. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know if you got the most recent version, but I analyzed the I-35 NASCO corridor.
You sent me some pages a few months back, I guess.
That may have been in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The attachment G, is it?
Right.
Okay.
I believe. I don't have it in front of me.
Oh.
Going north-south from Kansas City, from Texas to Canada, 10 interstate highway lanes, 2 rail lines, plus fiber optics and oil lines and so forth. The public discussion surrounds two areas. The pros are talking about how it would be good for business and jobs. The anti say it's going to be loss of sovereignty and foreign contractors. Mm. What nobody's talking about publicly, Frank, except you and I, is why are they building it in the first place?
Yes.
Well, they're building it in the first place because they're going to need it. They're going to need it because existing infrastructure will be damaged and destroyed with seismic activity and rising ocean levels.
Mm-hmm.
You don't build locks and dams across rivers 50 miles wide. The way you move bulk grains and things of that nature is with river barges. All the locks and dams that Corps of Engineers built the last 80 to 100 years will all be gone. It'll be finished. And they will, the heartland, the grain growing capacity of this country will still be mostly intact. And there will still be a great demand and need to move bulk grains and coal and things of that nature. That's why the I-35 corridor is going to be built. They're going to build it because they're going to need it. Pure and simple.
Absolutely, and of course that ties in with a great many things, such as of course being pretty good friends with your neighbors for oil and different things like that. And there you've got your North American Union. In a time of global catastrophe, you're going to want your close friends to be close friends.
Well, absolutely, and the people in charge, they could care less about national sovereignty. It's just power and money and control. That's all they're concerned about.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, John, it has been an incredibly fast-moving hour, and I've enjoyed every second of it. The book not only, my friends, contextualizes booklet, really. I mean, although there's, like I said, more than enough information in here for it to be. I've read some books, John, that are hundreds and hundreds of pages that have less useful information in there.
Well, there's no fluff in there.
No, not at all, and it's just beautiful. This is something I think everybody should have. Like you said, $5, that's nothing. They can go to your website, of course, to order this, www.thelibertyman.com. And in addition to sort of explaining the situation, why it is, how it is, and when it is, it also, of course, deals with quite a bit of preparedness for you, the individual. And that's why it is so useful. And obviously, John, it's why you wrote it.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I should give my toll-free number out for
Please.
Those with Internet access. It's 866-965-3007. I say again, 866-965-3007. And I'm on Sundays from 4 to 6 on Republic.
Yes, you are. And probably
PM. PM.
Yeah.
Normal people are awake.
Yes. Well, thank you for being abnormal with us this evening. You're a good friend, and I appreciate all that you do for the truth and for preparedness, my friend. Please keep doing what you're doing.
A great show, and enjoy the weekend.
You too, my friend. God bless you. John Moore, ladies and gentlemen, thelibertyman.com. Fantastic must-have, must-read book. No need for panic. Pick it up. And stay with us, folks. We'll be back here in about 90 seconds with hour number two of our Friday evening/Saturday morning edition of Frankly Speaking Radio.
You got headaches?